Welcome to The Thriving Marriage, the podcast for those who want to get their spouse back in love with them and truly thrive.
You'll learn why 95% of people don't save their marriage and the secret method no one else is talking about that will change everything for you. Are you ready? Let's turn tragedy to triumph.
Here are your hosts, international marriage experts, Mark Johnston and Heather Choate.
I'm excited to be with you. I'm here with Mark Johnston. How are you doing, Mark?
Doing great. How are you today?
Good. I'm a little tired and sore and sweaty because we're putting in a chicken coop in our backyard. We got 21 chicks and 10 ducklings. And wow. My basement is just a chirping little cacophony down there.
Wow. That's a lot all at once.
It is. And we're building the coop from scratch. So anyway, that's what's going on in the chote world. Today, though, we're going to be talking about how to get your spouse to talk to you. I know a lot of you have mentioned how difficult it is that you wish that your spouse would just open up and would talk with you. So as you guys are watching us live, leave a comment if that sounds familiar. If you're watching the replay, again, let us know. In fact, if you could rate your communication level on a scale of like 1 to 10, 1 being that you have like no communication whatsoever, 10 being you have great communication, you can talk about anything, everything's really intimate and safe and trusting, where would you fall on that spectrum? So rate yourself on your level of communication. And today we're going to show you how you can increase that level of communication and how to help a spouse that's not wanting to talk to you to open up. Before we get to that, though, we're going to share a client win of the week. Mark, you want to share this one?
Sure. This is shared from Kim. Kim says that she had a win tonight. Her husband came back and picked the girls up for his week with them, and we talked for almost 6 hours. We were both very open and honest. He wants to come back and work things out with me, but he is scared that the changes won't be permanent. One step at a time here. She goes on and says, this is literally the best program I've ever tried. Thank you, Mark and Heather. It's always nice to hear that feedback like that.
And so that is exactly what we help people do, right? In fact, Mark, I think, you know, we've been helping thousands of couples now. In case you guys are just tuning into the podcast for the first time, we've helped thousands of couples over the past 7 years with this really proven process. And one of the things that I really appreciate is that even though not every marriage is saved, and we're never going to say that every marriage is going to be saved, one of the things I really appreciate about what we help our clients do is we do open up more respectful communication between the parties. And so that is always a benefit as you move forward, because you're going to have a relationship with this person no matter what. And so I love that. And more often, though, we're able to help you deepen that connection and start to work on the issues in the relationship, help them go from being unwilling to talk to willing to talk to you, unwilling to work on the marriage to willing to work on the marriage. So wherever you guys rated yourself on the scale of 1 to 10, let's talk about some of the things that we want to consider when trying to get your partner to open up and talk to you. And our conversation today is not going to be exhaustive, and we're not going to be able to give you like the sniper approach of exactly what you need. That's what we do in our one-on-one coaching, right? But what we do want to do here is our intention is to help you have some principles and some tips that should break the ice and help you start to see some positive momentum in your relationship that kind of apply across the board. So, Mark, what is the first thing we want to consider when our spouse isn't wanting to talk to us?
Well, when I'm considering this sort of scenario, I often imagine if they're asking us, like, how can I possibly have any sort of conversation with my spouse, I assume that there's some amount of tension. There's some reasons why the conversations aren't happening. And quite often, further conversation or just engaging in conversation in some way, I assume, is probably not feeling safe or it's not feeling very comfortable. So I usually, you know, when I'm working with clients one-on-one, I'm looking at them and saying, well, why is this so uncomfortable? Or why is this, you know, quote unquote, dangerous to start engaging in conversation? And so the first tip is like, if there are a lot of hurdles to get around just to have some basic conversation, you want to start off considering some limitations or light boundaries. And the question I think that really helps get that going is just the question, what are you trying to talk about? So that's what that's where I would start, is like, what can you do to help narrow the focus for your spouse and try to help them see what's coming up? I often will tell people, like, hey, if things are a bit more predictable, if they're a bit more certain about what's going to happen in the conversation, if they know the topic ahead of time, they agree to that topic, that can often get around especially even heavier situations where there's very little communication going on. And so, just answering that question for your spouse, what are we trying to talk about, can go a long way. Now, if we're doing this, Heather, I don't think that you can just come out and blurt out, hey, I want to talk about the kids. I mean, can we adjust this at all? Is there something that we can do perhaps to make that a little bit easier, do you think?
Right. So definitely coming at it from a place of being a little more calm, right?
Mm-hmm.
A positive perspective on what's going on, upbeat, or even, enthusiastic in the way that you're saying it, in your tone, can really help to seem less threatening to your spouse, right? Even if you're needing to talk about something more serious, the way that we approach it is going to say a lot to our spouse. Like, is this going to be a safe conversation, or are they going to grill me? Is it going to be the blame game, or are we actually going to be communicating, right? Is this going to be a positive conversation or not a positive one? One of the things that I've heard you say, Mark, is that oftentimes when your relationship is really on the rocks, your spouse is pulling away, they put up the walls, they don't want to talk to you, communication is not rewarding to them. Mm-hmm. And so they're not going to feel like they want to do that, right? And so what we want to do is make things safe and reward the communication so that they are going to want to increase the communication and keep it going. And so that's, again, something we really help our clients with. But as you're coming to it, just your own mindset or tone of voice is going to go a long way in showing to your partner that this is going to be a rewarding or a safe thing to do.
I think that the assumption a lot of times when there is a lot of tension is that anytime you might come forward and say, hey, we need to talk, that there's going to be some discomfort, an attack, or some complaints. And I think that last bit, that what you said right there, really kind of turns that around a bit. Even if you have to talk about something heavy, the way you approach it has a big impact. And in my mind, that sounds a little bit odd to say, okay, we're going to talk about something serious, something heavy, maybe possibly even some negative feedback, like saying, hey, we need to fix something. So it sounds a little bit odd to say, how do we, let's be enthusiastic about it. But at the same time, when I engage in conversations like that, and, when my wife approaches me like that, it does make it a lot easier. It helps me to know, where she's trying to take the conversation a little bit more. And this is I think just having that difference in tone just does a world of good for a lot of people. Like, just as an example, if we're just talking hypothetically here, Heather, if Ben came to you and said, we have some issues and we need to talk, that's a very different conversation than if Ben came to you and said, hey, you know what? There's some things that we need to get out of the way, but I really want to work through this with you. I'm excited. I think that we can really come together on this. World of difference.
Right. Yeah. The other one, I'm like, okay, yeah, I want to talk about solutions. I want to see what we can do here. I've been maybe feeling the same way and I wasn't sure how to bring it up or whatever. Right. Also, we need to talk. Those are buzzwords for even my kids. I don't know if your kids are I need to talk to you. They're like, I'm in trouble. I'm like, no, I just actually want to talk to you. So I've learned I don't want to say those words to them. So I think the same thing kind of applies here to our spouse. It's like, hey, I would like to address this. And I feel really confident about us finding some good solutions and it being a really positive experience. Mark, you've also talked about framing the conversation, right? And home messages, right? So we can even create home messages around our communication. Communication is comfortable. Communication is safe. Communication is respectful. Communication is, you know, insert the blank of the good thing that you want it to be, and frame that conversation with that story, right? With this is the home message. This is the story that we're creating around the conversation. And that's going to be a lot more productive. I'm going to give just a very simple example from my own marriage today. We needed to talk about money. We have a lot of house projects going on and a lot of, you know, debt and a lot of bills and just, you know, plans for summer. So in the past, this has been a sticky topic, right? So many couples can agree. It's sometimes really challenging to talk about money. And in the past, it's been not our favorite topic, sometimes a little bit of tension around it. And so today I was like, you know what? I'm really excited to get some clarity with you on what we want to create and what we're doing. And I'm looking forward to talking with you. When you have 10 minutes to go over this with me, let me know. So I didn't like force it on him right then. Another thing I'm just going to put as a side note about my own tone is I have noticed that for me, I tend to be loud and fast. You guys don't know that. You haven't listened to the podcast before, right? And so when I use a more subtle tone and I'm a little more quieter and a little more gentle, even with my kids sometimes to get their attention, I'll whisper. So just using like a softer tone for me, I think helps with kind of the maybe abrasive nature of my go, go, go-ness. So I've noticed that that gets me a lot more of a positive response from Ben, because I do want it to be a positive experience.
All right. And we just threw a whole bunch of tips, just all ones that I did want to comment on that one thing that you said there. You mentioned like saying, hey, don't approach people saying, hey, I want to talk to you. I didn't necessarily include it in our notes for today, the podcast, but I did see that very thing on a lot of other people's, you know, list of things not to do. So like always when we're going into this, I always like to check in, like, what's the general consensus of some of the other writers and experts out there on relationship matters. And I was like, oh, that's an interesting thing that they're being very specific about. Just don't use the words, hey, we need to talk. But I was like, okay, we have to kind of decide how much do we want to include in here. But I thought it was interesting that you pointed that out. And yeah, that's generally the consensus out there.
Yeah. Before we move on to the next awesome point here, I did want to just bring in another one, a little bit of a sidetrack, but I think it goes really well with like, what are you trying to talk about? And is it the right time to talk about this? I think that timing is really important when your spouse is very hesitant to talk to you, when they're very closed off, when they have their walls up. There is a pacing that we want to have with our spouse. And so you guys may have heard this before, but it ties right into our method that we use here, is that if you're trying to solve deep issues too soon, if you're trying to push them to talk about deep issues and they don't even want to talk to you like at all, that is absolutely going to backfire. So you might be wanting to talk to them and solve these things, and you might think that that's like the solution because I get it. It's kind of like the big problem, but problems have to be solved in order. And so pushing too soon or too much or too hard when they already have a lot of resistance is going to backfire and only cause their walls to go up even more. And so what we help you do is like, no, yes, what are you talking about? And what is the right thing to talk about at the right time? Is this the right time to talk about why they're having the affair? Maybe not. Maybe that comes a couple weeks later when we built up some stability in the relationship, when we reduced some of the tension, when we've helped them see that it's safe to talk to us. It's actually rewarding to talk about some things. And that's one of the things that, you know, Mark, you and I talked about a couple weeks ago, is that acceptable arena, right? Is this a topic that they're even willing to broach at all? And if not, then don't do it. Like, don't do it yet. I'm not saying don't do it ever, because those problems do need to be resolved eventually. Just make sure that you're doing them in the right order. And that's hard to know, because if left to ourselves, we just kind of guess, we might assume, we might just go with our instincts. And oftentimes it's not creating positive results, Mark, what have you seen as far as timing goes of talking about different issues?
You're definitely right in that timing can play a big part, especially if there's a lot of emotion going on. There's often what I call like different filters on a conversation. So whether this is stress, emotions, whether this is distractions like kids or any number of other filters that kind of mess up or taint the tone of the conversation, like it's easier to try and avoid those things than to push through and try to force your way into having a conversation that is going to be a little bit more strained. But that's more like localized timing, like what you were talking about is also more of like a big picture timing of like, what can we talk about and at what stage of like some repair can we really address these things? Because it's a lot harder to say, talk about say something like physical romance within a relationship if your partner is talking about separating and divorce. Like it makes one seem a little bit out of touch if you're like, well, I think we need to have more sex, or I think we need to have, you know, hold hands more, when they're like, yeah, I'm ready to go out the door. It doesn't really work. Right. So yeah, like in terms of timing, there's like, yeah, that little localized timing, and then there's the big picture timing that does need to be considered. You're right.
Yeah. So let me know in the chat, like if you aren't happy with the conversations that you're having right now with your spouse, then that's probably an indication that you may be pushing topics that just aren't effective with where you're at in your relationship right now, and that you need to do some kind of groundwork to get to the place where then you can have those conversations. So let me know in the chat if that sounds familiar, if you feel like every time you try to broach a subject and your spouse just bristles, then there's some other steps that we need to do first. So let me know what kind of conversations you're having with your spouse. How effective are they? How happy are you with them? If you're not getting results that you want, I'll give you some solutions to those. In fact, just leave a comment and say conversation starters, and I'll send you our 7 proven conversation starters guide, which is completely free. It helps you open up the communication and get you even more tips just like this. So just leave a comment, say communication starters, or just starters if you want to be just quite right simply. And we will send that to you right after the podcast. All right. Our next tip here is positive regard and empathy. So how positively are you thinking about communication with your spouse when you're like, okay, we're going to have this conversation. I'm going to see them and we're going to talk. How positive do you feel about that? Are you approaching it with a lot of dread, with a lot of assumptions that things are going to go wrong? Are you already having a really negative belief or story about your partner and everything that they're doing and how they're acting? So it won't really help to go into a conversation if you're already assuming something really negative about your partner. And if you already have a belief that the conversation isn't going to go well, what are the chances that it's going to go great? Mike, you know what I mean? Like, we create the things that we expect. If I expect that, you know, the conversation with Ben about money is going to be really tense, he's going to be upset, he's going to kind of shut down, and I'm going into it with that expectation, so much more likely that that is going to be the outcome, right? And so it's just really understanding that there are reasons why your partner is acting the way that they are. And those reasons feel justified to them, right? They feel like, yeah,
if I can. So I was actually just talking to a client the other day, and he had some very vague suspicions that his wife might be engaging in an affair. We didn't have concrete proof or anything. And I told him, you know, during our conversation, I was like, let's put this on hold just for a little bit. And the next time I spoke to him, he's like, by the way, I tried to confront my wife about this affair. And I was like, oh no. And so like the way he was describing how he went in, he's like, you know, I went in, I told her I knew what was going on here. And he's like, she shut down. She didn't want to talk to me about it, which just told me that, you know, she's hiding something. I was like, hold up here. There's a lot of reasons why someone might not want to have that conversation if you're going in there saying, ha, I've caught you and I'm going to confront you about it. And, you know, Now, do I admit like that there might be an affair in that situation? There might be. It's possible. But at the same time, if you have to ask yourself, like, okay, what is your goal there? If our goal here is, you know, like the title of the podcast, like how do we get our partner to talk to us? You really can't go in all guns blazing there and trying to like catch them in the thing that they've done wrong. That's not going to go well. And especially for husbands or wives that tend to be a bit quieter or to shut down with confrontation, I can guarantee you that that's going to continue that pattern if you approach it like that. So like these sort of things, I mean, it doesn't have to be about an affair, but we could do this, you know, we could take this on a smaller scale. Like, okay, I'm going to go talk to my husband because I asked him to do the dishes and he didn't do it. I bet he's just being lazy. And, you know, if you approach it like that and like, ha, I've caught you and I know that you did something wrong here and I'm going to confront you about it. Of course, they're not going to talk to you. It's going to turn into an argument at the very least.
Right. What it does is it puts you against them. Right. And it's like this battle of, you know, justification and blame game and all those things and your opponents. Right. And one may be trying to win the conversation or win the point or prove something. And what we want to do is get both of you on the side of the table and have the issue on the other side of the table. That's how we want to go about it. Mark, I'm going to just contrast what you had with that client and how he just kind of went in. Like, that's so instinctual, right? And I'm just going to confront it. I'm just going to prove to her, right? We were working with a client probably like a year and a half ago, and he was suspicious that she might be having an affair. But before he confronted her, he did a very smart thing, in my opinion, and he got on a call with us. And I remember talking with him and saying, you know, there might be other possibilities here. And is there another way of looking at this? So let's check our own assumptions. Is there even a positive story that could be told about this, right? Mm-hmm. And so then he, instead of like accusing her and blaming her and trying to catch her, he went and asked her. He said, hey, I found a mask in your car. This is during COVID. So maybe a year and a half, 2 years. Back then. In your car, and it smells like cologne. I can't talk. Cologne. What is, you know, I'd like to know what that's about, right? So just an open-ended question, no accusation. And she said, it's my nephew's. I picked him up for school because his car broke down on the way to school, and he left it in the truck. And so instead of making like this huge issue, right, and kind of blowing it way out of proportion, in this case, he was able to get clarity on what it really was. And can you imagine if he'd gone in guns blazing, right? And like, that wasn't actually what happened. So he approached it with a lot more of this empathy, which is what we're talking about here, right? I want to understand where you're coming from. Here's what I found. I just want to understand what's going on here, right? And a positive view even of, I would love to see the truth here. I'd love to not just accuse you of something, and I would like to really understand where you're coming from. And so that created a totally different response, of course, and a totally different trajectory for their marriage. That's one of the things we have to be so careful with, is sometimes we just get so caught up in that heightened emotion that then words just come out and we just react. And that's what we help you do, is teach you how to interrupt that pattern of just going into the fear, going into the lashing out, going into the anger, going into the rage, going into the shutting down or the silent treatment or whatever your pattern is, so that you can create a new, healthy, and functional pattern with your spouse.
So does this mean, though, that you have to just kind of go along with or forgive people, to just agree with anything that your partner is doing, even if it's something bad? Like, I want to know, how do you really have like this positive regard or empathy then with people? Like, when you do, when there is like really negative behavior that you're having to confront, because that certainly does happen.
Right. Right. And it's absolutely not just, you know, going along with everything your partner is saying or doing. That would not be the healthy functional pattern that we're talking about creating whatsoever. But it is saying that I'm going to choose to see you in a positive light, because more often it's more like checking your own assumptions and seeing them, even if their behavior, you don't have to agree with the behavior, but you can still look at the person for who they really are, right? So there's a distinction there. I love my children unconditionally. Sometimes I cannot stand what they are doing, right? I love my husband unconditionally, but sometimes he does things that are really hurtful, just like I do things sometimes that are really hurtful. And so it's not allowing those things, the behavior, to continue, but it's still choosing to see the person in a positive light. That's how I look at it. Mark, how about you?
I think, you know, for me, I have to talk to people quite often who have engaged in hurtful behavior or negative behavior. And I, not to pat myself on the back, but I think I do a pretty good job with helping them feel like I get them, that I'm on their side. That, and one of the big things that I do there is, you know, when I am talking about these sort of behaviors, In my mind, I call it like giving them a little bit of grace. I'm saying, oh, like, here are these really hurtful words that you said. And I'm thinking to myself, well, why would they have said that? Why would it make sense to them? And I kind of reflect that on the situation. So I say, oh, I wonder if you were feeling really hurt yourself. I wonder if this was a really rough, difficult situation for you. I wonder if, you know, like, some of that pain was coming out in some of what you're doing. And then that gets the conversation going. This person who was like, yeah, I said some really hurtful things, we now get to have a conversation about how they were feeling and why those things happened. It, you know, this is a very different sort of situation. You know, me being in a position where I'm meant to help them process through these things, but it absolutely opens that conversation up, because now we get to explore both sides of this, not just the end result, the negative behavior, the hurtful behavior, but like all those feelings underneath of it and how it impacted other people. And it allows us to explore what, you know, some solutions around that.
Right. I'm going to put in the chat here. So there are likely reasons why your partner, again, is acting the way that they are. And remember that those reasons, they feel justified to your partner. Mm-hmm. There's a reason why they're doing it. Right. And so the more you can do exactly what Mark said here, you can try to understand what those reasons are. Why would they be doing this? Why would they be saying this? Then you can empathize with those reasons, right? And you can possibly even view them in a positive manner, right? And the more you do that, you give that positive regard, you empathize with their reasons for doing things, then it's much more likely that your partner will be willing to talk about these issues, okay? Mm-hmm. They're going to be much more willing to open up, because it's no longer attack. You know, attack mode, blame mode, you have one person that's unwilling to work on the marriage and the other person is attacking them and coming down on them and saying, you're evil, you're awful, how could you do all these things, is not the equation for turning a relationship around. And it's not the equation for creating a healthy, lasting relationship either, right? So I've been astounded and humbled in my own life when I thought I knew exactly why he did what he did. I am so sure of it. And then I ask him, well, where were you coming from? Like, why were you doing that? And it was nothing like the story that I made up about him. And even if it was closer, and even if the behavior still was not great, I can still even understand why he did it. Maybe he was really, really hurt, or he was really having a hard time with something. Maybe he's at like his own personal wit's end, and he's just doing the very best that he could. And he recognizes maybe it's not even the best thing to do. And he's like, you're right, I shouldn't have done it. Or even if he doesn't recognize it, it still helps me by looking at it from his perspective, putting myself in his shoes as best as we can to try to understand. And that automatically gives empathy. And it, again, it's humbling to me. And it's happened so many times where kind of like falling flat on my face with this, like, oh, I thought it was because you didn't love me. Or I thought it was because you just didn't really care about me. And he's like, no, that wasn't it at all. I do care about you. And I was going about showing you that I care about you in this way. And it just, you know, it wasn't seen that way. So that's why it's so important that you really try to understand why your partner's acting the way that they are, because those reasons are justified to them. There's a reason why they're doing it. So let's really get that opened up. Let me know if this makes sense. All right. Say empathy if you want more tips on how to do this and how to see the positive regard. especially if your partner is engaging in some really destructive behavior. I understand that it can be challenging. It's really learning how to disconnect the behavior from the person and understand that the person has a reason why they're doing that behavior. It doesn't mean that we allow it, though. It doesn't mean that we say it's okay. It just means that we're trying to understand where they're coming from. So leave a comment and say empathy if you want some more guidance on this and if it's making sense.
Right. So the next tip is more of a question. I want you to consider asking yourself, are you trying to get them to talk to you or are you trying to get them to listen? It's a big distinction. And when a lot of people are trying to say, well, I want my partner to communicate with me. And oftentimes I'll go into this asking them these sort of questions, like, what are we trying to get from this conversation? And a lot of times I'll hear the response like, well, I want them to understand how much they hurt me. I want to confront this problem. So a lot of the times, like when I, try to go about discovering some stuff behind the conversation problems, communication problems, it's oftentimes an issue with this, that people are going into the conversation wanting to feel heard rather than allowing the reluctant partner or supporting the reluctant partner and feeling heard. So it's a good question to start with, like, just take a look at some of those conversations and look back and say, okay, was I actually listening to the other person? Was I asking questions? Was I interested in what they had to say? Or was I just waiting so that I could respond, so that I could make my point, so that I could inject my opinion into the situation? Because, if we have to be honest with ourselves, a lot of us are a little self-centered. And I think that's natural, especially when there's like some issues that you want resolved. It's natural to feel a little bit self-centered and want your concerns to come out and to be resolved. But if you're having trouble with getting your partner to talk to you, this is often an obstacle to making that happen, is if they are not feeling heard, they're feeling shut down, if they're feeling like their opinion doesn't matter, that it's not going anywhere, that they say something and it just falls flat. Like, yeah, that's a really quick way to get those people who are a little bit on the edge of like not really wanting to have the conversation, for them to just shut down even further. Yeah. And what do you see with this, Heather?
I agree. And I'm guilty of the same, right? So I think this is a powerful question before you go into the conversation, or even if you're in the middle of it and you're like, why is this not going well? Like, am I trying to have my spouse open up and am I trying to understand them, or am I trying to get them to understand me? Are they trying to get them to listen to me? So if your spouse is already really shut down, not wanting to talk, then it's not very likely that they're going to be willing to listen to you and understand you and give you empathy. And I know that your heart's craving that, because like we all do want that. And maybe you want them just to see your side so that they have a change of heart and they have empathy and understanding towards you. But it's just not likely going to happen. So you have to be willing to give that gift of understanding first. And in my own marriage, I've had to have conversations where I really check myself on this one. Like, I came here because my intention is actually to understand you and help you feel safe to talk and to open up. And if you say something and I feel defensive, my pattern in the past is just defend myself and jump in, because I don't want him to think that about me. And then it turns to him, I flip the conversation. Now, buddy, you got to understand me. And it's all about me, right? And so I really have to check myself on that pattern. Now I'll even like say, okay, I would love to address this with you. And I would love to have it be, something that we work on together. I'd really love to understand where you're coming from. Is it okay if you're able to understand where I'm coming from first? Because we have a relationship, I can ask that, right? If your relationship's really struggling, you may not be able to ask that. You may not be able to get that. You may not be able to receive that yet. You have to build up to that level. And so then I'll just be able to kind of dump, and then I'll be like, okay, he understood me. I can like breathe now. And now I'd love to understand you. Or sometimes it's the opposite. And so I just kind of like say, okay, it's my turn to really just understand you. And I'm not going to go into getting defensive and you trying to understand me. So I hope you guys see one of the main principles here is really interrupting past patterns that aren't working for you. Like the pattern for me of me wanting him to always listen to me and always understand me and give me empathy and having to break that pattern myself to really understand him, to listen to him, asking those open-ended questions, right? Showing interest and respect, sometimes curiosity, following up with more questions. That is a new pattern for us. And it served us really, really well. So whatever pattern you're in with your spouse, ask yourself this one. It's going to be a really powerful one for, I think, a lot of you.
Absolutely. I think like that focus there really is important. And I know even I myself am a little bit guilty of this at times where I'm like, okay, I'm starting this conversation. And I recognize it after the fact. I'm starting this conversation, but I really just want them to listen to me. And I think absolutely in many situations, there's room for that, for you to initiate a conversation and just say, hey, look, I want you to pay attention to me a little bit. Like you said, Heather, you can do that with Ben. Sometimes I have to be very explicit with it about this with Jen. I'm like, I'm going to talk to you about this subject. I just want you to listen for a moment and ask some questions and be interested. And that feels great. If you're struggling with the conversation, I think often initiating that conversation framed as you being interested in what they have to say on whatever the topic ends up being, absolutely starts it off with them being a bit more engaged. They know that you are like, you're stating your intention there, and it allows for them to like be a little bit more open. So especially if you like then continue that past those opening stages and you ask open-ended questions, if you're curious about what their responses are and you actually follow up with more interest and maybe even more questions, that's how you like really feed that self-centered side that we all have. And it feels good to a lot of people if someone's like genuinely interested in what you have to say. Like there's very few times where I see that, you know, unless there's a whole lot of obstacles in the conversation, a lot of like emotion going on, most people are going to open up under those circumstances. Most people like to be a little bit at the center of attention in some ways.
Right. Yep, absolutely. I'm thinking again of a client who got a text from his wife and she said, you know, it's over, it's done, you should just move on, right? And one of the ways that we coached him to respond, it was something like this, you know, I can understand that for you, it is over. I'm having a hard time with that. I'd like to understand where you're coming from. I'd like to have one conversation to help me to really understand where you're coming from, so that I can feel at peace about this. Is that acceptable? Something along those lines, right? So it wasn't like, hey, we need to save our marriage, or why do you think that? Or yeah.
Even coming at that conversation was like, oh, that's an interesting thing. Like sometimes I have clients where that statement will come out of the blue, and, you know, even further in that conversation, like, oh, that was a really strong thing to say. And I'd like to understand where that's coming from. Like if we switch that around and get them to show that there's that interest there, oftentimes there's a lot of room to open up and to take that conversation in more healthy, productive directions. So.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah. The next one here is speaking their language. I have to kind of chuckle about this one because how do I say this tactfully? I have a love-hate relationship with love languages, I guess. I feel like they're helpful in some extent, but then they can be also a little surface level. So
yeah,
this is love languages that we're talking about though. And it is important to really understand that when you engage with your partner in the way that they appreciate, right, being engaged with goes a long way. Okay. It's not going to resolve everything. None of these tips are going to resolve everything. And I think that's where I have the hang up about the love languages, is that some people think it's like the end all be all to saving a relationship. And to me, it's just a little too surface level, but
I can adjust.
Mark, what is your
perspective? Yeah, I'm going to adjust this. Just like, so love languages is one that a concept that I think a lot of people get, but I'm going to adjust it in a way and say, hey, we can focus on this and in other types of languages. So there's a lot of different ways that people communicate. Sometimes we talk about how some people are a little bit more avoidant, or what's the other word?
Like withdrawn?
A pursuer avoider sort of thing. For some reason I couldn't think of the word pursuer. But like sometimes some people are a little bit more avoidant. Sometimes people really like to pursue problems. By speaking your partner's language and like how they like to approach the problems goes a long way. We could also look at this in terms of personality types. Mm-hmm. You know, if you really are into, there's all sorts of personality theories, whether this is astrology type things, or, you know, my favorite, I really like Enneagram in terms of personality types. The Enneagram has a lot to say about how people like to approach conversations and problems. I think if we were to look at this and with love languages, you know, we could say that with many of the love languages, there are some small ways that you can kind of hint at some of these love languages within conversations to make the other person feel more cared about, feel a little bit more at ease within the conversation. So if we said like, okay, hey, the love language is about quality time. If you're inserting like little hints that, hey, you really want to focus in on them, that they matter to you, that, you know, like this moment in like understanding them, like showing them a lot of consideration in this conversation is important to you, that starts to speak to what's important to them and helps them to feel more comfortable in the conversation. But like I said, we don't necessarily have to apply love languages to this, but I do think that you do need to understand perhaps the language of your partner and the style with which they are most comfortable. I know this is probably being a little bit too broad or vague, saying, yeah, it's who's your favorite way to approach languages. But I do think that just even having some consideration for your partner's style of communication in some small ways can go a long way there.
I agree. I've seen, you know, where there's like a disconnect, a mismatch. And my friends, like, if you feel like I'm like trying all the things and nothing's working and I'm exhausting myself and I'm starting to lose hope, it may, again, be part of this equation here. For example, like I had a client I just talked to, I think a week ago, and, you know, doing all these acts of service, like, you know, doing the lawn work and repairs on the house. And that's just not her love language. Like, she's not going to see that as communicating much, because it's not how she resonates. I don't know what hers is. I just know that it's not working with him because she doesn't notice and she doesn't care. And so, you know, you might be doing what you think are the right things, and you might be saying what you think are the right things. If it's not landing, then it's probably not the right thing. Okay. So Mark, let's give a quick breakdown of some of the general different languages and how you can express them, even in like small ways, even if your partner isn't opening up, you know, even if things are kind of tense right now.
Yeah. So these are just like little ways to get your partner and maybe to engage a little bit more. If we're using the love languages theory. So we can start with words of affirmation. I think lacing in some compliments here and there, noticing and affirming some of the positive things that they're doing within the conversation can really put them at ease. I mean, this one is probably even the easiest one to say, this is what you can do to get your partner to open up a little bit more if their love language is that words of affirmation. I think, you know, for me, quality time is an important one for me. And I notice how this reflects within my own conversations with my wife. And the more that she shows that interest in what I have to say, that the more that she says, hey, I want to have this time, this moment with you, it really helps me to be a lot more open to, or even if she can take me off so we can be by ourselves, does a lot for me to be much more open with my wife. So like all those little things that say, this moment between us is special, goes a long way for me. And I imagine that other people with with that as like a primary love language probably feel something similar. What are some other ones that we hit two? I think there's three more, right?
Yeah. So we've got gift giving, right? And this is where you can look for opportunities to find those special treats, right? Share special foods with them. This might be someone that is appropriate to give them flowers, to bring them presents,
yes,
you know, to do those little gestures like that. Sometimes it's not though. So again, you've got to pay attention. Like sometimes people are like, I'm going to send her flowers and I'm going to like, and it might not be it. But if gift giving is their love language, this may work, right? And as you do this, you know, try to engage in conversations while offering these items. You know, it's like saying, I'm going to link the home message, right? Of I appreciate you, I value you, I you know, I care for you with the gift.
I've seen a lot of this where that this is the case where this is like a really big, important thing for not the client, but maybe the spouse. And oftentimes this has become an icebreaker where, you know, my client will make some extra dinner for their spouse, or they'll come by with, you know, just that right thing to fix. Well, I guess that would be acts of service, but you know, they come by with that little extra treat, or like you said, like the flowers, and just saying, hey, I just wanted to drop these off, wish you a good day. And that's the start of like a conversation, a multi-hour conversation. Those little gifts really broke the ice and broke the tension and allowed for the conversation to be much more open. So yes, while we often have said, hey, it's not always a great idea to just give flowers and assume that that's going to fix things, it is, it can, as odd as this might sound, it is, or it can be a tool to...
it's like breaking the ice.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, communicating that in a way that they're going to receive well. And then the next one is a little tricky to me because this is my husband's physical touch. And if things are really rocky, sometimes it's hard to have that physical closeness and physical touch. But some things that you can do is your own body language, right? Smiling, right? Because if they're a physical, that's the way that they, you know, that's their language. That's how they understand things. So smiling, maybe even being a little bit flirtatious, like winking, you know, blowing a kiss, you know, flirtatious, playful movement, those could be all good ways to communicate affection. You know, even a physical touch itself might be limited right now. I had a client that hers was actually physical touch and she didn't want hugs. She didn't want kisses, but she loved foot rubs. So he would like rub her feet for like hours. Like he found a way to connect with her because she was open to that level. And that was her love language. And so there's ways to kind of work around if you aren't able to have that physical touch. And then as you increase that, of course, that would be awesome. What about acts of service, Mark?
I will tell you that, you know, this is my wife Jen's love language, and she will just talk about anything and everything. You know, if we're taking care of a project that she really wanted taken care of, like if I go out in the garden with her and take care of the yard, which is something that she really appreciates for me, those are really oftentimes really good moments to for her to open up and for her to really share a whole lot. But I've noticed that especially, like if I do little favors for her, if I do things for her that she probably could have done for herself, she is always in a much better mood and much more willing to engage and connect and, you know, subsequently have a conversation if I really wanted to in those moments.
Yeah. Awesome. So leave a comment if you feel like you know what your partner's love language is and how you might be able to communicate that a little bit more, even if things are kind of tense or they're not wanting to talk with you, because this is a way that it's really going to connect with your partner. So in summary, my friends, like if you paid attention today, let me know, like, what do you think is the common theme here? Of all the suggestions that we gave, leave a comment and let us know, what did they all have in common? What stood out to you about them? Here's the catch here. Like all of these suggestions, what they have is a focus on the experience of the other person. And so we want to be paying attention to what they feel, how they feel, and whether they feel heard. This is going to be the recipe to help them to want to open up more. Like Mark mentioned here, we're all a little self-centered, right? We all want to feel heard ourselves, right? But if you really want your partner to open up to you right now, then allowing for a bit of focus on them, on your partner, is going to help ease some of the tension. And there's less need to, you know, fight, get into arguments, to be defensive, or to make sure that you're heard first. So giving them that gift of understanding. Final thoughts here, Mark.
Yeah, I would agree with all of that. I do think that most people are much, much, much more willing to talk if they see that they can share their opinions and have those opinions be rewarded, either through some attention, through some understanding, through some validation. If you can just allow them to be a little self-centered, like, because we all want that a little bit. And if you just, instead of fighting it, just like say, yeah, let's let you be a little bit self-centered here, is a really way, good way to make this all so much easier to have that conversation that you are wanting to have. Yeah. So, yeah.
And again, if you guys notice that things are not going well in your conversations, you're not happy with the results that you're getting, and you want to learn how to change the pattern, interrupt that pattern to get your spouse's attention, have them consider the possibility of staying, consider the possibility of talking with you more, and how to help them open up that communication with new, healthy, functional patterns, leave a comment, say pattern down below, and I will send you a free training that we just did on changing those patterns so you completely change the trajectory of your marriage. So just leave a comment, say pattern, and I will send you that free training as soon as I can. All right, marriage myth buster. Good communication means always agreeing with each other.
Well, so we look at comments, we look at just things that we are actually hearing from clients, things like this. And while I didn't necessarily hear these words exactly, I have seen the idea behind this definitely around, you know, this idea that, okay, it's bad to have disagreements, or it's bad to have fights. If it's bad to have disagreements, then obviously like the most ideal situation, according to this myth, is that you should always agree with each other, right? Well, no, that's not the case. I think there can often be something difficult about disagreements in many couples, especially for partners who are a little bit more soft-spoken, who really don't like a lot of tension. They're very averse to that. I think there are some personality types that feel very comfortable with conflict and those who do not. I've often heard people say, well, you know, like, this is just how I grew up. We would fight, we'd speak very loudly. And, you know, this is how we talked to each other when we had some disagreements. And other people are just not like that. So especially for those people who are a little bit more soft-spoken, it might seem like it's just always better to agree. But many of those soft-spoken individuals, the thing is the problem is they might just be agreeing with a partner to avoid confrontation or drama. And that's a recipe for disaster. So on the surface, these sort of situations may even look ideal, as there does not appear to be any major conflicts because they always agree with each other. And I always kind of wonder at these situations when I've sometimes very occasionally heard like old couples, we say we never fight, we never disagree on anything. And I'm like, that sounds suspicious to me. So like on the surface where it looks ideal and there's an avoidance of major conflict, these same situations end up with one person often feeling unheard, controlled, maybe that their opinion just doesn't feel as important, because the fact of the matter is no two people are the same. And if there isn't ever any disagreement, I would say 9 out of 10 times, even maybe higher than that, chances are that someone is repressing their opinion. And if anything, that the healthiest situations concerning communication and arguments, concerning where there's going to be agreement, is when there can be open and productive discussion around disagreements. So much rather than saying it's better to not disagree or it's better to always agree, I would say it's better to have disagreements and make sure that everyone is feeling considered, everyone's feeling heard, everyone feels like their point of view, their side of this is, there's a strong consideration for that. Because I think that there can be high levels of satisfaction, even if like your opinion is not the ultimate, like it's not ultimately not chosen as like the eventual outcome, just making sure that that is spoken, it's heard, it's validated, it's understood, goes a long way. And that only comes about by being able to openly discuss these disagreements in the first place.
Awesome. Love it. Thank you, Mark. And next week, we're going to share with you our SOS, Save Our Marriage, some expert advice to keep your relationship from sinking and have your spouse pause on divorce. Thank you for joining us today, Mark. And we look forward to seeing your marriage thrive.
See you, everyone.
Thanks for listening to The Thriving Marriage, your A to Z blueprint for not just surviving marriage, but thriving. Until next time, my friends, thrive on.